From the independent producer project of KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Bob Carlson, and this is Unfictional. Unfictional is a program of stories and original documentaries. It's a showcase for unique audio storytelling. And without a doubt, that description applies to radio artist Joe Frank. He's achieved a near legendary status over his three decades of producing programs that defy easy description. Stories that exist in a world of their own. And it's not only listeners that have been inspired. Joe Frank has been a hero to radio producers, and he's influenced the work of other artists. Brent Weinbach is a stand-up comedian based here in Los Angeles, and he says that listening to Joe Frank is what made him understand his own voice as a comic.
Well, his stuff is so good. He's so good. I mean, his stuff, it seems like there's so much thought put into every single thing he says, you know, and it makes me think. At first, when I heard it, it sounded like some kind of noir detective. You know, he'd describe things like this, and then, and he'd always do this, and then, and I love that, and then. That was something that I love that, and I don't know, I would later try to emulate that. And after really a couple years of listening to Joe Frank, it just clicked with me. I understood the side of me that I wanted to bring out on stage. I could be deliberate and presentational about the way I did stand-up. And that's sort of how he does his programs.
That's comic Brent Weinbach. Today on the program, the premiere of a new work by Joe Frank, created in collaboration with Julian Barrett and Julia Davis. From KCRW.com, it's Unfictional with Isolation.
I think if I was to trace back my present discomfort, you know, it would lead back to that day when I bought the suit from a charity shop. It was very cheap. That was what drew my eye to it, you know. It was a gorgeous, rich fabric, and it fitted like a glove. I popped it on, you know, looked at myself in the mirror, I thought, there I am, you know. There's a man who's going places. The shop assistant sold it to me, and sort of looked at me a bit funny, like they were going to say something to me, but I didn't say anything. And I left the shop. I was walking down the high street. I rounded a corner, and a woman in her 60s, very wild-eyed, you know, grey hair. She looked insane. She was staring at me, you know, and she screamed at me, "Get that thing off. Get it off. Get his suit off." She started trying to pull it off me, pulling the suit right off me. I sort of wrestled with her for a bit, but in the end I took the jacket off and just threw it at her and ran. I got to the bar and I needed a drink quick. I ran in there and ordered a pint of Guinness, you know. And then she came in, you know. She wanted the trousers now. She was sort of pulling at my trousers. Everyone was looking round. It was a terrible scene. In the end, you know, the lads all started laughing and joining in, so to speak, but she was distressed. It was not funny, you know. Anyway, I gave her the trousers. I was sat there nearly naked, you know, my underwear. She took the trousers and she left. And that was the end of it. I never saw her again, but it turns out that the suit was her husband's suit, you know, a dead husband's suit. Given away by one of her children. And she'd seen me wearing it. I sent her over the edge. I just felt from that moment on I've been wearing that dead man's suit the whole of my life. Here I am again, in my basement, talking into my dictaphone, recording the thoughts, you know, recording the endless drip of thoughts as they drip. I went to the zoo yesterday. For some reason, I thought that might help. But I was struck by the horror of the place. Not even the cruelty, you know, just the horror of these creatures, you know. I was breaking out in a sweat. I had to hold on to the bars of the monkey cage.
These animals, they look like magnified head lice. Giant, hairy organisms just shitting and f***ing and eating in boxes. And here we are observing them, you know, like a horde of goggle-eyed bipeds just staring at them from behind the bars, you know.
I used to go there a lot as a kid. My dad would take me. He'd leave me on the merry-go-round for quite a while he chattered up the woman at the gift shop. I got to hate the sound of that merry-go-round, you know, the organ. That endless organ that got into your soul, the sound of that thing, the emptiness of the pipes just haunted me through the years, you know. So when I got back to the zoo yesterday, I was straight back there, you know, straight back on that merry-go-round. Little spinning glimpses of my father and the woman from the gift shop. Like an enormous zoetrope with me flying around it, the age of 6. What a world.
A 100 years ago or so, it was just a crossroads in the countryside, you know, where two roads met. Now it's a heaving metropolis. When I go out, I'm confronted by them, hordes of strangers spewing out of the ground, pouring along the thoroughfares. I keep seeing people I recognize, but I can't tell whether they recognize me. I also see people who remind me of people. I don't know whether I'm not recognizing them properly or whether they're just the people who look like the people I do recognize. There's so many people. Upside to it, of course, you know, because there's hundreds and thousands of women too, hundreds of thousands of opportunities, chances. It's overwhelming at times. I used to ride the underground quite a lot. That's a great place to meet women. Sometimes I get weighed down by the amount of women wandering about this town, you know. I was on the underground and I saw a girl. And, you know, I liked the look of her, and she seemed to like the look of me, too. I was reading a book. She got up, got towards the doors, you know, before they opened and let her out. I wrote my number on one of the pages of the book and tore it out and gave it to her, you know. And she got off the train and looked at the piece of paper in her hand, and as I wondered about her, another girl got on. She was even more attractive than the first one. And so it just started there, really, you know. I did the same thing again. Just before she got off, I wrote my number and my name in the book on a page and tore it out and gave it to her. I ended up giving my number out to about 40 girls that morning, tearing out pages from my book and handing them to girls. Each one of them, of course, under the impression that it was only them who had received the handwritten note. Women like that, you know, the personal touch. Nobody likes to feel as though they're part of a long list of alternatives, do they? Not one of them called. All I was left with in the end was an eviscerated book, The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock. Museums are a good place to meet women, of course. I went to the British Museum. In the British Museum, everything is stolen, you know, the spoils of the Empire, laid out, proud as punch they are of it. I saw a woman like the look of, you know, I was following her around the exhibits, following at a safe distance, you know, pretending I was interested in Ice Age axes. I couldn't think of a way to make a conversation, you know, I was trying to pick a moment. I stood next to her and I looked down and we were both staring looking at a mummified bog man. His face like a rancid ham bag. His body all twisted and gnarled. His sat penis like a twisted finger. I just couldn't bring up any words. It sort of felled me, you know, struck me dumb, thinking most of us just disintegrate. But maybe that's better, to be preserved at some stick of beef jerky, staring up at me with his eyeless sockets.
All the things I'll never be, all the things I'll never see, all there is that's left for me is here in this eternity of isolation, 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 isolation. The cavalcade, the jamboree of life I thought was meant for me, I never dreamed that it would be replaced by this eternity of isolation, 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 isolation. But if I live, I'll never dream another dream again. I'll harness the moon, I'll drink from the stars, I'll live my life all o'er again. I'll never hunger for this isolation, isolation, isolation. From the stars, I'll live my life all o'er again. I'll never hunger for that isolation.
Subway under the city, you know. It's a great way of passing time, you know. And I saw a girl sat opposite her, you know. She gave me a look. and I gave her a look. When she got off, I got off. I think she was aware that I was following her, but she didn't seem to mind. She sort of half looked over her shoulder, but not in a frightened way, you know, more in a way of checking I was there, making sure. Went on for about 20 minutes, just through the streets. Finally, she got to her flat, and she went into her house, and I went up to the door and pushed it, and it opened. Opened onto a corridor. The lights were off, and I could hear music playing. It was familiar somehow. I recall it was the music of Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers. And I moved down towards the music in the flat. It's like I was floating down the hallway. There was smoke coming from under the door and a strange blue light. The door opened and there she was, stood in front of me, draped in silks. And she was sort of backlit, so she was silhouetted. And she'd painted herself in coloured dyes. And she was swirling and moving to the music. I took up with her. I felt compelled to join in. Leaping around the room, you know. I was moving so quickly, I don't know what happened. I hit a bookcase or something, and suddenly I was dizzy, and I didn't know what I was doing. I think I was sick. Fell into the bathroom, and my head went down the toilet, you know, literally face down, and she was flushing the toilet and smacking me. Other people didn't see it that way, but I know what I saw. I know what I felt. And I had to do community service for quite a while. Walking the streets, picking up rubbish, cleaning bins and taking graffiti off the walls. I've reached a sort of point in my life where I feel angry and extremely violent. Almost like I could smash the table between us with my bare fist. Blood spraying out over your face.
I can feel it smashing across me.
It's running down your cheeks, all over your front. You're covered in blood, my blood.
My blouse is sodden.
Your nipples are poking through with the blood.
They're absolutely dripping red.
They're dripping red.
Crashing on the beach, the foam shattering across the sand, curling its way across your body, your torso, your bare naked torso. The waves are just embracing you. The sun's beating down on your face. Your hair is almost singeing in the sunlight. Your eyelids are really roasting, but it's very calming.
I don't believe it works. I just don't believe it works.
The drink?
Or the drink. Well, no, the drink works for me very well. As long as I can get hold of it, it's wonderful. I mean, no, the therapy, I just don't think, you know, that it's working for anybody, really. I mean, it's just painful, isn't it? You're just going round in circles. And when I have to sit here and just listen to people week after week, you know, going over the same thing, or the self-hatred that, you know, and I'm looking at them thinking, yeah, that I would hate yourself if I was you. I'm thinking that. you know. They're saying, oh, you know, they're worried about sort of self-worth issues or the way they look or whatever. And, you know, if my mouth was to be set free, I'd dread to think what I'd say, you know, which is why I had just have a couple of drinks first thing before. And I don't not know more than that, because God knows what I've said when, you know, when I have my blackouts, I can't remember a goddamn thing I've done, you know.
Well, the drink seems to have really set free your mouth today.
I'm sorry if it's, I thought it would be helpful to share with you. You know,
no,
I don't. I don't want you wasting your pennies on me. I mean, God knows I can't afford to have any therapy. But anyway.
Yeah, I'm keeping one eye on the clock here myself. But
we've got about a quarter of an hour left. I don't mind going a couple of minutes over.
I just wanted to try and get back to the things I'd been talking about earlier with my father and the...
Sure, talk about your father, because I could talk about mine till the cows come home. Tell me about your father.
About the merry-go-round.
Yeah, tell me that story. I love that story. I'd love to hear it again.
Seems like my whole childhood was spent just spinning round.
And he'd put you on it, and then you'd just see flashes of your dad when you go... Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it just... I just see glimpses of him, you know.
I've had to find ways, you know, just to get my way through, you know, with the drinking and the... And sometimes I'd just slice my elbows, you know, just have a little chop at my elbows. I've often used a little knife that my father used to use to open the letters, and I've taken some pleasure in using that because it's, you know, a sort of family heirloom thing. And you know, I like to think that I'm getting my own back by sort of stabbing myself.
Wow, that's quite something. I feel like, I feel we've made a breakthrough. Where do we go from here?
Well, I mean, it's up to you. I mean, we could carry on with your session if you want to. I'm always happy to, you know.
Would you like to go for a drink?
Oh, I'd love to go for a drink.
Six. I was playing out in the local park. I was on a swing, you know, and I was going this way and that, and up and down, and I was getting higher and higher, and at the very apex of the swing, the high point, you know, I was catapulted off over the fence and into the meadow beyond. I lay there face down, and I was just staring down into the soil. Small bugs, you know, crawling about. The butterfly's wing, you know, beats, and away down the line, a man falls over.
I think that you should pursue the one-man show idea that you had. I think that's interesting.
Right.
Maybe putting your autobiography to...
I thought about
it. ...as a musical or whatever it was you were saying. I wasn't really listening, but...
I've got a few songs, and I've got a little storyline that links them all. It's raining inside, inside my heart. That's one of my songs, actually.
Would you like to sing that?
I would do, but I'd need another drink.
Why don't we order just like a bottle or something and just be done with it?
I know, let's do it.
Time to wonder, do I dare? And do I dare? Time to turn back and descend the stair. With a bald spot in the middle of my hair, they will say, how his hair is growing thin. My morning coat, my collar mounting firmly to the chin. my necktie rich and modest, but asserted by a simple pin. They will say, but how his arms and legs are thin. Do I dare disturb the universe? In a minute there is time for decisions and revisions which a minute will reverse. Shall I say I have gone at dusk through narrow streets and watched the smoke that rises from the pipes of lonely men in shirt sleeves leaning out of windows? I grow old, I grow old. I shall wear the bottoms of my trousers rolled. Shall I park my hair behind? Do I dare eat a peach? I shall wear white flannel trousers and walk upon the beach. I have heard the mermaids singing each to each. I do not think that they will sing to me.
Hier soir, je marche dans la maison blanche, dans la chambre, dans la chambre, dans la chambre,
Monsieur Pompolon. Monsieur Popelon,
dans la chambre de la cœur.
Monsieur Popelon,
dans la chambre de la cœur. Dans la chambre de la cœur. Dans la chambre de la cœur.
Oh ping bang pong, oh ping bang pong. Pom pom, bom pom, bouffe. Ah bouffe.
From KCRW.com, it's Unfictional, and you've been listening to Isolation, a Joe Frank program created in collaboration with Julian Barrett and Julia Davis. The song Isolation was composed and sung by Julian Barrett. The program was mixed by Ray Guarna. Special thanks to Michael Story. And you can find many more Joe Frank programs at joefrank.com. And you can find an archive of all of the old Unfictional programs at kcrw.com/unfictional, where you can also like this show on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Unfictional. You can always podcast this show on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. I'm Bob Carlson, producer of Unfictional. The associate producer is Nick White. Thanks to the Annenberg Foundation, the Goldhirsch Foundation, and the Roth Family Foundation for their support. And I hope you'll join me next time for Unfictional from KCRW.com.